Hello and welcome to the Semantic Cybersecurity Brief, our fortnightly podcast where we discuss all things cybersecurity. I'm Dick O'Brien and joining me today is Semantic Threat Researcher Bridget O'Gorman. I'd like to welcome you back after our late summer stroke early autumn break, and I hope everyone is as refreshed as we are and raring to go. We're going to be resuming our fortnightly schedule now until the year end, and we're very much going to pick up where we left off because in the cybersecurity world, it has been by no means a long, sleepy summer. There's been a lot going on, particularly in the field of ransomware, which is what we're going to devote most of our podcast to today.
Yeah, that's right, Dick. And I know that it's something you've been spending most of the summer working on, really, because you produced our latest white paper, which was on ransomware. So maybe to start, we could discuss that and maybe you could fill us in on what some of your findings were.
Yeah, sure. So this is a paper that we shared with customers a couple of weeks ago. I think it is the fifth year that I've been involved in putting together a paper on ransomware. And I think that while every year there's been a whole lot to talk about, this year in particular, I found that the topic had become even more diverse and complex, I guess is the best way of describing it. So let's start with what I call the macro trends. First thing to note is that the ransomware landscape is continuing to shift towards enterprise level targeted attacks. So if you look at the stats for all of the ransomware attacks that we've logged here at Semantic, you'll actually find that they're down over the past 18 months. Ostensibly, that's good news. But that trend is really down to the ongoing decline of your old-fashioned indiscriminate ransomware attacks, where it's sprayed all over the place using spam campaigns and really designed just to infect one computer at a time. This kind of ransomware, it hasn't disappeared entirely. And in some regions, most notably Africa, it's actually still quite a major nuisance. However, alongside that overall trend, what we're also seeing is a continued increase in the number of organizations affected by targeted ransomware attacks. That's where the attackers attempt to encrypt most, if not all, of the computers on the network, delete all the backups, steal data, and all of that usual nasty stuff that we've been talking an awful lot about on the podcast over the past year or two. And this is the key trend, really, because it's these kinds of attacks that corporations or organizations are really, really worried about. The other notable stat is geography. If you look at targeted ransomware attacks, they are overwhelmingly directed at organizations in the United States. And yes, sure, it's a big country and it's always going to be number one for lots of different kinds of cyber attacks. But in this case in particular, the proportion is just off the scale. It's like there's 10 times more than even the second country on the list. So this is one threat where the US is really, really in the firing line.
Yeah, that's quite a statistic, really. And I suppose that's the trends. And then I guess, what are the interesting developments that are going on in the area of ransomware?
Yeah, I mean, and this is even more interesting because there's a good few things going on, but there's a few that really stand out. And for me, the first thing is what you'd call the maturation, I guess, of ransomware as a service. Now, ransomware as a service isn't a new phenomenon as such, but I think it's really come of age from an attacker's perspective over the past year to 18 months. From a cybercrime perspective, it's really good business practice because it's very lucrative. Ransomware, you know, the one downside to targeted ransomware attacks is that they're very labor intensive. So to do it effectively, you need somebody manually engaging in the attack, kind of issuing commands and what have you. So most ransomware authors, they'll only have so much manpower at hand. So that kind of limits the amount of attacks they can carry out. Ransomware as a service means that you can sell your tools and your playbook in many cases to other attackers in exchange for a cut of the ransom payment. And that's really win-win for everyone. It maximizes revenues for the ransomware creators, and it provides an avenue into ransomware attacks for attackers who may not have enough skill to develop their own ransomware operation, or their skills may lie in other areas. So this is really great news for cyber criminals, but it's bad news for victims, because not only does it increase your chances of being targeted, it also multiplies the number of adversaries that you face. It's no longer a case of just one payload being delivered using consistent TTPs by the same people. There could be dozens of different groups all attempting to deliver the same ransomware, but using completely different sets of tools. What we've seen over the past year or so has been an increase in the sophistication and the complexity of the ransomware as a service market. First of all, I think affiliates as ransomware as a service collaborators are known as, they've become quite mobile. If a ransomware operator shuts down, what we see is that a lot of them just simply migrate to another ransomware group and start using their ransomware instead. And that's been going on for a good while now. But we're also seeing something of, I guess you could describe it as a shift in the balance of power because in some cases, we've observed affiliates using two different strains of ransomware in a very short time period. And in some case, they've used them in the same attack. In other words, they've tried one ransomware, it didn't really work out for them, and then they deployed another as a kind of a plan B as such. And that means, I think, that these people have enough clout or confidence not to have an exclusive arrangement with one ransomware operator. They seem to be free to shop around as such and use multiple people's offerings. So I think originally there was a perception that affiliates were kind of low-skilled attackers and just following the playbook that was provided by the ransomware creators. And while undoubtedly these kinds of attackers are probably still around, there's also, I think, a cohort of highly skilled affiliates who developed their own TTPs, and they use these regardless of what payload they're deploying. The second notable development is the role now, I think, that botnets play in ransomware attacks. I think a lot of the original targeted ransomware attacks relied on spear phishing as a vector. But then there was a realization that these major botnets out there, like TrickBot and similar, they were already penetrating multiple organizations. They were originally created for the purposes of financial fraud, but now they're being repurposed, and their most choice bots are the ones that get inside major organizations, and they're being sold on to ransomware attackers. And in some cases, indeed, it's the same gangs behind both the ransomware and the botnet. So you'll see that with TrickBot. It's controlled by a group that we call Miner, and other people call them Wizard Spider. And they have TrickBot, but they're also behind the Riot and Conti ransomwares. Iced ID is another botnet that we've seen cropping up a lot in the past year, particularly this year in relation to ransomware attacks. And even the old Drydex botnet, which was the big hitter in financial fraud, that's still being used by Evil Core, who are also behind a number of ransomware families such as Wasted Locker and BitPamer. So I think that this collaboration between botnets and ransomware operators is bad news for organizations, because in the old days, while you'd never ignore a TrickBot or Drydex infection on your network, it was probably, it mightn't have been seen as a total code red situation. You'd contain it, you'd clean it up. And you'd probably move on. Now, though, if you find TrickBot on your network, you have to wonder, you have to ask the question was, did anything else come in with it? Probably assume the worst case scenario and mount a thorough investigation.
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely the case at the moment. And that all sounds really interesting, Dick. So how can people get their hands on this paper if they want to read some more?
Well, it isn't public yet. What we do with our white papers is that we share them with our CES Complete customers first, and we shared that a couple of weeks ago. But we do plan to actually make this paper public in the next week or two, and we're going to put a blog out summarizing the findings, probably containing a link to the paper. So look out for that on our blog. It should be coming out fairly soon. Okay, let's move to you, Bridget, because lots of things have been happening since we went off the air, as I mentioned, and you've been looking at some of the more significant developments, including, I think, the apparent return of the Revil ransomware gang.
Yeah, so Revil, which we also know as Son Nahidi, was one of the most active ransomware gangs in the first half of this year, but it went offline on the 13th of July following a high-profile ransomware attack that it carried out, which exploited a vulnerability in the Kaseya VSA remote management software. Now, this attack had brought huge attention to the gang, and it wasn't known if its disappearance was the result of law enforcement action or if the group itself decided to kind of go dark for a while. However, the gang did go quiet for about 2 months, and we even saw some of its affiliates beginning to work with other ransomware gangs, specifically Lockbit, actually, which was something we published a blog about in August. However, on the 7th of September, the dark web servers of the Revil ransomware gang mysteriously came back online. The ransomware gang's happy blog, where it listed its victims, and its payment portal, where victims went to negotiate with the gang, both came back online. It wasn't initially clear if this was a sign the gang was back or if this was the result of some kind of law enforcement activity, but within days, it became clear that the gang was back and new Revil attacks did begin being carried out. So the gang claimed that it had briefly shut down because it believed its previous spokesperson, who was known as Unknown, had been arrested and their service compromised. But now it just seems that it is back in action. And it's interesting that the gang has come back under the same name, because more usually when we see ransomware gangs come under that kind of intense scrutiny and maybe disappear for a while, they more often come back under a new name. But Revil has decided not to do that.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting, all right, because as you say, they almost always come back, but albeit under a different guise, so that they must feel confident that whatever law enforcement operation was directed against them, they can still continue to operate under the same name as such. And also, I think there was a decryptor that was also released to unlock machines infected by Revil, wasn't there?
Yeah, so a free decryptor for the Revil ransomware was released by cybersecurity firm Bitdefender on the 16th of September, so just over a week after Revil's return. And the cybersecurity company said it had developed the tool in collaboration with a trusted law enforcement partner. And the decryptor tool will work on all files that were encrypted by the Revil gang before their disappearance on the 13th of July. Now, Bitdefender did not give a whole lot more details about the tool or about how it was developed, saying as it was an ongoing investigation. They couldn't comment any further, but they said that they felt it was important to release the universal decryptor before the investigation is completed to help as many victims as possible. And it's likely this was kind of spurred on by the return of Revil, because now I think Revil is accepting ransoms again. So I'm sure Bitdefender wants to discourage any of its previous victims from paying any ransoms. And while businesses hit by Revil are unlikely to have been offline for the last 2 months waiting for a decryptor, you know, it could certainly have value for individuals who may have been hit or for companies who perhaps were able to get back online, but maybe were not able to restore all their data from backups.
Yeah, and it's not just Revil we now have to worry about. I think we've also seen the emergence of another major new ransomware family while we were off the air.
Yeah, so the Black Matter ransomware gang appeared at the end of July, with claims that it was planning to attack organizations with revenues of $100 million or more. And it was widely reported in the media that Black Matter had emerged as a successor to DarkSide, the ransomware gang which carried out the Colonial Pipeline attack in May, which was hugely high profile and which we discussed multiple times in this podcast. And the gang disappeared shortly after that attack. Now, Black Matter has denied that it's run by the same people that were behind DarkSide. Rather, it claims it has incorporated aspects of Lockbit and Revil and DarkSide into its ransomware. And the group claims it was familiar with DarkSide, that it had worked with them in the past, but that it was not one and the same group. However, many people do still believe you know, that the same people are potentially behind both threats, or certainly that there is, you know, some kind of crossover there for sure. And Black Matter has proved quite active since it emerged on the ransomware scene. And healthcare and public health sector entities in the US were actually warned by authorities recently of the elevated threat of potential ransomware attacks from Black Matter. And this is despite the fact that Black Matter claims it does not target healthcare or other selected critical industries. But we have seen those kinds of promises from ransomware gangs before, and we have seen those kind of promises broken before as well.
And some ransomware gangs have also started threatening victims who might want to negotiate with them.
Yeah, there's been two incidents of this recently, actually. So the Grief ransomware gang said last week that it would delete its victims' encryption keys if a negotiation firm was hired. And in a statement posted on its blog, it said if it saw a professional negotiation from a recovery company, it would destroy victims' data. Now, ransomware victims do often work with negotiators in an effort to obviously lower their ransomware payments, try and get their data back. But also because many companies, you know, they won't be used to navigating things like the dark web or cryptocurrencies or negotiating with ransomware attackers, like things that are often required to communicate with and pay these ransomware gangs or to get their data back. Grief is believed to be tied to the Russian hacking group known as Evil Core, which has been sanctioned by the US government. So it's been speculated that the reason Grief wants its victims to avoid negotiating firms is because they're hoping that the victims will not be alerted to these sanctions and so will be more willing to pay the gang. And this announcement came after the Ragnarok ransomware gang also made similar threats. They said they would automatically publish a victim's stolen data if they contacted law enforcement or negotiation firms. In an announcement that it started at the site, the group said it will publish the full data of victims who seek the help of law enforcement or investigative agencies following a ransomware attack. And it said that the threat did also extend to any victims who contact data recovery experts in an attempt to decrypt the data or negotiate with the gang. So it's interesting to see that two ransomware gangs have taken this kind of approach. And it'll be interesting to see if we see any other ransomware gangs following suit.
Yeah, and it just goes to show that they are, albeit in their own way, kind of worried and spooked by law enforcement and government attention. I guess the other impact of ransomware that's been this year is on cyber insurance, and I believe it's accounting for a massive proportion of cyber insurance claims at this stage.
Yeah, so a report from insurance giant Marsh recently revealed that almost a quarter of all cyber insurance claims filed between 2016 and 2020 were related to ransomware attacks. But this percentage had increased because in 2020, ransomware attacks accounted for almost a third of the claims filed. And the cyber insurance market is estimated to reach $20 billion by 2025. And I suppose this kind of data, it shows how big a role ransomware is playing in this market at the moment. You know, it's certainly true that the fear of a ransomware attack drives many businesses to take out cyber insurance, but also the cost of ransomware attacks is one of the main costs that these cyber insurers face. And there have been various reports over the last year that have shown that the cost of cyber insurance is rising. And that's probably something that's likely to continue given how big a threat ransomware remains.
Yeah. And finally, let's move away from ransomware for the last couple of minutes, because I gather you wanted to talk about a botnet called Meris, which was behind a record-breaking DDoS attack.
Yeah, so Meris is a relatively new botnet, and it consists of an estimated 250,000 devices. But it has broken the record for the largest volumetric DDoS attack twice in the space of just a few months. So in June, internet infrastructure company Cloudflare said that it mitigated a 17.2 million HTTP requests per second, RPS, DDoS attack, which was aimed at one of its financial industry customers. And this figure was almost three times larger than any previous volumetric DDoS attack that had ever been reported. However, this record lasted only until earlier on this month, because then Meris aimed a 21.8 million RPS attack at Russian internet giant Yandex. So Meris is built on a modified version of the old Mirai malware. And before its emergence this summer, these kind of RPS-based DDoS attacks, they've become quite rare. We hadn't seen one at this kind of scale for a good number of years. And these RPS-based DDoS attacks, they're different from traditional bandwidth DDoS attacks, because rather than clogging up a victim's internet connection bandwidth, these volumetric attacks send as many junk HTTP requests to a victim server as they can in order to take up CPU and RAM space and to prevent legitimate users from accessing targeted sites. So while the approach is different, the impact is very much the same. Now, Meris has reportedly been primarily targeting internet service providers and financial organization entities in countries like Russia, the UK, the US, and New Zealand. And the botnet reportedly threatens its victims with these DDoS attacks in an effort to extort a payment from them. And if the targets don't pay up, the hackers start off with smaller DDoS attacks that then grow in size with time in order to put pressure on the victims to pay. However, in a potential blow to Meris's operators, this week the cybersecurity division of Russian Telecom's joint Rostelecom, Rostelecom Sober, said that during routine analysis of Meris, it was able to see that some infected routers were reaching out and asking for new instructions from an unregistered domain. So the researchers registered the domain, effectively sinkholing parts of the botnet, and they revealed that over the course of a few days, it received pings around 45,000 infected devices, which equates to around 1/5 of the botnet. And researchers were also able to identify that the botnet was assembled via Gluckteba, which is a malware strain targeting Windows computers, which is typically used as a loader for various other malware strains. So we do seem to be getting a bit more insight into Meris's operations. So it'll be interesting to see if it can kind of continue to operate at the scale that has been going forward.
Yeah, I suspect this may not be the last time that we discuss it.
No, probably not.
Okay, let's wrap it up there. So because that's all we have time for this week. If you've been enjoying the podcast, don't forget to subscribe to avoid missing out on all of the action in future. You can also follow us on Twitter at threatintel or medium at medium.com/threat-intel. If you'd like to read our latest research, check out our blog, which can be found at semantic-enterprise-blogs.security.com/blogs/threat-intelligence. We're going to be back again in 2 weeks' time, but until then, thank you and goodbye.